हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now begin Shankya. Non-theistic dualism. Shankya philosophy, considered by some to be the oldest of all the philosophical schools, was systematized by an ancient thinker named Kapila, different from Devahutiputra Kapila of the Srimad Bhagavatam, whose Shankya system does not exclude God. The first work of non-theistic Shankya, the Shankya Sutra, is traditionally attributed to Kapila, but its present form is not his original work. Though the Shankya Karika of Ishvara Krishna is actually the earliest available Shankya text. Among its more well-known commentaries are Gaudapada's Bhashya, Vachaspati Mishra's Tattva Kaumudi, Vigya Bhikshu's Shankya, Pravachana Bhashya, and Maturavriti. Topics traditionally emphasized by Kapila, Ishvara Krishna, and other Shankya commentators are the theory of causation, the concepts of prakriti, the unconscious principle, and purusha, the conscious principle, the evolution of the world, the concept of liberation, and the theory of knowledge. The special feature of Shankya is its summing up of all of the Nyaya and Vaisheshika constituents of reality, with the exception of Ishvara, God, who is simply excluded from the system, into two fundamental principles, Purusha and Prakriti. Near Ishvara Shankya, non-theistic Shankya, is therefore a dualistic philosophy. So it means everybody's taking whatever is their system and in defining it, then you're coming up with what are your basic principles, your basic elements. So that's always very, very important. So you have to be able to establish what is your foundation. Because if you're going to then, as you view everything, as you deal with everything, all of that has to be able to be taken back to those original definitions. Right? There can't be anything in your philosophy that can't be defined by the original definitions. Does that make sense? And then from that, then everything else is established. So then in the Nyaya, then you're establishing, you know, what are the means of perception, what are the things that are perceived, and then various ways in which you can deal with that which is perceived and that which is, and the methods of perception. And so you're trying to logically establish then what is your connection between something that is unseen, right? Because something seen is not necessarily a problem. It's what's unseen that you need to understand, right? So in this method then, you have to establish then everything based on that system of logic. Right? And then from that system you can understand how everything works. Something that's illogical is then an imperfection, and that will always give a problem. So you're trying to see that everything that you think, everything that you do is systematic, is logical. And then by being logical in this, then not becoming absorbed in the day-to-day emotional elements that are there, then you deal with the world from a detached point of view. And from that, then you will free yourself from the material contamination, so the material absorption. The logic, excuse me, so, yeah. Then, Vaisheshika, then that is establishing there that everything's coming from atoms. And this element of atom meaning the smallest possible manifestation of something. Anything that can be divided then is not atomic. And if it can be divided, it's not eternal. Because the eternal then becomes, according to one's karma, it becomes arranged by the Supreme that... formation of the atoms is then manifest so that you can continue your karma. Now the idea being that you at some point disengage yourself from that and then be able to free yourself. And in this way you come to that impersonal position. Now it's interesting to note that both in Gotama and in Kannada that their system, though they accept the Supreme, and that Supreme is beyond the effect of the material phenomena, and is in control of the material phenomena, but in both cases, their ultimate goal is impersonal. So now, everything that's within them, all their atoms, all their methods of understanding and all that, that is then absorbed within Shankya, in that it's establishing that everything is masculine and feminine. You'll have the Prakriti itself, and then you'll have Purusha. But they're not taking it to the point where there is the Supreme. Right? So in here, then you're bringing in the element of relationship is there, but it's being very, very much analyzed. So whatever is covered in these other two philosophies already is covered in here, right? So that's what will happen is naturally as you go up, whatever is in these other philosophies are absorbed in the next philosophy. Then from that, then you eventually get to Vedanta, right? And so then from Vedanta, then you have the same like these impersonal elements, then you have the personal. So whatever is in the Vedanta is already... in any other philosophy is already covered by Vedanta. Does it make some sense? Right? So, this principle of being able to understand how each one is absorbed in the last then becomes very important because then when you're discussing these various philosophies, you will be able to know, what are the technicalities that you're working with? What is your basic fundamental foundation? Right, because that foundation you always have to, it means if your system is going to be solid, it always has to be consistent to the framework that you use. Right, so that means now in Shankya, everything will be able to be related back to Purusha and Prakriti. So there won't be any aspect of the philosophy that you can't connect in that way. Does this make sense? It's a very important element because then your thinking process becomes molded to function in a very logical way. And you then have a method by which you can connect yourself with anything around you. Whatever you perceive, whatever you interact with, you can apply your philosophy upon it. Otherwise, if it only is limited, then it loses its application. Does that make sense? Yeah? So then here it's then dualistic in that it has Purusha and Prakriti. And there is no, at least in here, no Supreme. So in Kapila Muni's, of Devahuti's son, then he establishes there's the Supreme Lord. And then from there, then you have Purusha and Prakriti. Right? Does this make sense? Shankya theory of cause and effect. All Indian philosophers base their explanation of the evolution of or manifestation of the universe on two fundamental views of cause and effect, Satkaryavad and Asatkaryavad. According to Satkaryavad, the effect exists in its cause prior to its production or manifestation. But the Asatkaryavad position maintains that the effect does not exist in its cause prior to manifestation. This latter theory is also called Arambhavad, which means the doctrine of the origin of the effect. All other theories related to cause and effect are based on one or the other of these two fundamental positions. The Shankya philosophy accepts the Satkaryavad view of causation. Regarding Satkaryavad, there are two schools of thought, Vivartavad and Parinamavad. The first is accepted by Advaita Vedantists, who hold that the change of a cause into an effect is merely apparent. For example, when one sees a snake in a rope, it is not true that the rope is really transformed into a snake. It simply appears to be that way. This theory serves as the basis for the Advaitist explanation of God, the universe, and the individual soul. Shankya philosophy upholds the view of Parinamavad, according to which there is a real transformation of the cause into the effect, as in wood being transformed into a chair or milk into yogurt. So you're going to have your element here of this at least here in the Vivartavad and the Parinamavad. Vivartavad is that there is no transformation because it never actually is that to begin with, because there is no division of anything, there is no actual difference in anything. Anything that is perceived as different or a cause and a chain of cause and effect, then doesn't actually exist, right? So it's not that it's transforming, it's just it appears to be, but it actually doesn't, because the soul appears to be separate from Brahman, but actually it's not, it is Brahman, so therefore it appears that it's transformed. So in the same way as the material manifestation appears to be transformed from Brahman, but actually it's not, because Brahman is unchangeable. Does that make sense? So therefore everything's an illusion that it's going on. Amazing that the illusion is so, perfect, in that it's so consistent. Because generally if you see, if you take people in illusion, you go into a madhouse for people in illusion. Each one has this unique illusion, you know, a madness. There is no consistency in madness. Right? So in illusion you don't have, but here it's so perfect. It's perfect to the point that they say if you deal with this illusion in this way, you will become liberated. Because you'll become self-realized. Does that make sense? So, but then the thing is, in that state, if according to the philosophy, then you don't actually become self-realized because you always were. So then technically, there's no need for a process. So for them to have such an elaborate process and philosophy is actually unnecessary. Because if you actually are all Brahman, you don't actually have to become Brahman, so there's no need of a process. Right? And if they say it's a pastime, it's something you're doing for fun anyway, so it's going to go away on its own. Right? When you get tired of it. Does that make sense? So in other words, they completely undermine their whole position. That's the thing. So the Parinamavad is there actually is a transformation, because everything is real, so therefore then there's going to be a transformation from one form to the next. Right? So it's like here, the yogurt, milk is transformed into yogurt. It's not an illusion. It actually, the milk does become yogurt. Right? But the illusion is to think that the yogurt does not have any connection with milk. Does that make sense? So Shiva is a transformation of Vishnu. So seeing, understanding that, then it's a proper vision. But if you think Shiva stands as supreme on his own, instead of a transformation of the supreme, that's illusion. Right? That. And this other aspect then is that then it goes back. So the Shankar, okay, the effect exists in its cause prior to its production or manifestation. Means, in other words, I have something, and by dealing with it, there'll be a result. So one is that the result is already there before it manifests. The other is that it only when it's manifest, then it has its, then the cause is, it actually has its position. So in other words, your action is the source of the result. But actually, it's the result is always there, but it's when you perform the correct action, it manifests. You see, you catch the difference? So then what happened, we see is like in material life, we think that we are the cause of the effect. We do an activity, then we think, therefore, there is the effect. Right? But in here is that effect is already there before we perform that activity. The universal form already exists. All the options are already there. Now it's just a matter of we deal with, we deal with whatever is the manifestation, but the original, the result we're trying to get already exists. And so it's just a matter of we perform the activity, then it becomes manifest. But it's not that the manifestation is generating the cause. You know what I'm saying? It's not the gross is generating the result. The result is already existing. Does that make sense? Like that. So basically, this is the kind of level that the Vedic philosophy works upon. You can see very, very fine points. So if these things are understood, then dealing with modern philosophy becomes very easy, because they have, in no way do they have this consistency. That's why one school is there, it lasts for some years, and then somebody overturns it and this and that. But these things have been around for, you know, since time immemorial, because they're so consistent, right? But there is a shortcoming. They don't deal with everything, right? But at least in whatever they do deal with, they're consistent. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. Yes.
Is this also the same with when we want to become attracted to Krishna, that we have to make our own cause so that we can, like, increase the cause that we can experience the effects?
We have to, means love of God is already exists. It's not that by our devotional service, it actually is meant. It wasn't there before we performed devotional service, right? Prema is already there. Then, by performing the activities, then we it manifests for us, because we perform the activity. Therefore, we come in contact with it. But it's not that we perform the activity, therefore it generates the result, which makes us the controller. But we're not, we're the servant, because it already exists. So the cause and effect already exists, right? Because basically what you're having is your manifestation of your masculine and feminine, right? So they already exist. Does that make sense?
We increase our involvement.
Yes, we are just become involved in a particular way with what's already there. Right? In other words, Krishna and his potencies are already there. So the cause and effect are there. Now it's just a matter of how we involve ourselves with that cause and effect gives us particular results. Does that make sense? We don't have the right by our performing our activities however we like, doesn't generate necessarily the result that we want. You know what I'm saying? You know, we do something that we say will make us happy, but it doesn't necessarily make us happy, because we're dealing with the elements of the material energy not according to the way it's supposed to be dealt with. Right? So if we deal with the material energy according to how we're supposed to deal with it, then we get results that, you know, we could say are more appropriate. You understand? But unless it's dealt with devotion, you won't get a devotional result. You know what I'm saying? I deal with devotion, I get a devotional result. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's just like, or we can say here, let's say from this, real transfer. The milk exists, right? And yogurt exists, right? Now you can take the milk and turn it into yogurt. But it's not because you dealt with the milk in such a way to turn it into yogurt, therefore you generated yogurt, the concept of yogurt. No, you dealt with the milk in such a way that the concept of yogurt that's already there can manifest. You understand? Like that. So it's a matter of who's the boss.
So we just make ourselves favorable.
Yes, we deal with it in a favorable way, then you'll get, because it's God's laws, it's God's energy. Does that make sense?
And how does this connect to the example you gave once with when we have one desire, then that creates a future desire?
When we have one desire, it means you perform an activity based on a desire, it creates the desire to do it again.
Hmm.
Right? Because it means you're doing the activity, and then to do the activity means there has to be the desire. So that means then the activity is performed. But it's not that desire goes away because of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because desire is within sambandha. Your activity is abhideya. So just because abhideya is performed doesn't mean sambandha goes away. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the sambandha will give you prayojana, it gives you your result, but the desire still remains. You know what I'm saying? So only in devotional service can you get rid of material desire, because you transform it into spiritual desire. Right? So desire doesn't go away. That's why these other systems don't work, is because they try to get rid of desire. So it's a matter of transforming the desire. So lust is transformed into love. So material desire is transformed into spiritual desire. Just as spiritual desire was transformed into material. You understand?
And in this way, on the other side, the spiritual desire can be increased in this way.
Yes, because when you do a spiritual activity, then you want to do it again. Because whatever you get the result, that result having been gained goes from the prayojana or goal back into sambandha. It goes back to desire. You understand? It increases the field of desire. So desire will be increased. So therefore, by performing any activity, you actually, when getting a result, it increases your desire.
And this is then how we become more favorable to taking...
Yes, so that's how you become both more favorable to Krishna consciousness or more favorable to material. Whatever you perform, that's what then you want to do more. You understand? Like that. That's why then in good association, you know, practicing the process as approved by the authorities, then that's how we dynamically move forward in that way. Does that make sense?
So that's why it's important to hear.
Yes, to hear.
So that we actually
Yeah, you get the desire, because you have the field, and from the field you get the inspiration to be involved, to act. So by hearing, then we want to be involved, so therefore we'll act in Krishna consciousness. But unless we hear, why will we be attracted to devotional service?
Is this also the reason, the main reason why Krishna performs his pastimes?
The main reason Krishna performs his pastimes is to interact with his devotees. At the same time, is it creates an environment for those who would be interested or possibly interested to become devotees, or to further their absorption in Krishna, then that is also taken care of. You understand? Does that make sense? It's like this. If Krishna is only performing his pastimes so that you, as a matter of sadhana, can get attracted to it, then that means the pastimes are actually only part of your sadhana. You know, potential sadhana. So they themselves have no meaning outside of your need to be able to absorb yourself in something spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So they don't have any validity outside of that. So it becomes just a matter of your sadhana to uplift yourself from mundanity to the transcendental. Like that. Do you need some water? Oh, okay. So, does that make sense? So the point is then everything is just the process. So then once you come to the perfectional platform, you've absorbed yourself through remembering these pastimes. And you've freed yourself therefore for all desire and need and endeavor on the mundane platform. Then what? You know what I'm saying? Then what do you do with your life? Because the pastimes are only a process of sadhana. So God only performed them for you to elevate yourself. You understand? So that's like the Ishwara in these Gautama and Kannada. You know, or these other philosophies that there. He's just there to provide the environment for you to work with your karma and eventually get rid of it.
So it's another selfish.
Yes, it means it's a spiritually self-centered, you know, thing. In other words, liberation becomes the element. So it's only part of liberation. So its effect means it's just the workings of the Lord. In other words, the Lord dealing with the interactions of his energies as opposed to you controlling it. You know what I'm saying? So in these others, they establish that God is controlling the material energy, all, you know, the atoms or the elements that are there that we can perceive to deal with logically. Right? And so he, according to the karma of the living entities, is making all that happen. For the purpose of the living entity dealing with it and either getting the results of the karma, meaning, you know, good or bad karma of this world, or working in a detached way to get oneself beyond that, where one is freed from that and therefore liberated. But once you get to that liberated state, God has no more, does not have any really purpose with us. You know? Because we basically come out of the system. You understand the point? So that means God is performing his pastimes first and foremost as a way of expressing and tasting his relationship with the devotees based on affection. Right? In other words, his affection for his devotees is expressed through his pastimes. Right? As a side benefit, it becomes part of our sadhana. You know what I'm saying? Because if it's not that way, then when you actually do free yourself from the material energy by being absorbed in the Lord's pastimes, then what will you do? So when you come to that perfect stage, then you, like the Lord and the other devotees, are able to express your love purely. Then you can be actually part of those pastimes. Right? And that's your eternal engagement. So the pleasure of his pure unalloyed devotees, or his, you know, or his, in Vaikuntha, his pure devotees, that is his purpose. But because every living entity is naturally his pure devotee, then it helps in them getting over their illusion that they're not his pure devotee. But having gotten over it, it still remains as the method of expression. Right? So in other words, it's not a tool to get out of the material world
only. No, it will get you out of the material world. It becomes, it is the method, but it's not restricted to being only the method to get out of the material world. It is the method of being in the spiritual world. So what you're doing is performing the activities of the spiritual world in the material world, and therefore changing your perception of Krishna's creation and yourself to where you become qualified to work within his internal potency as opposed to his external. Does this make sense? Is this all right? Does everybody catch these things? Because otherwise we can tend to put things out of perspective because of our own particular conditioned needs. You know, we need to get out of the material world, so therefore we'll look at all these things from that. It's the most important is to get out, to give up sinful activity, to become good, to become spiritual. Those are things that are necessary to do, but those in no way are ultimate goals. Right? Ultimate goal is love of Krishna. Right? Love of Krishna's devotees. So these things become ways by which we get there. Right? But having gotten there, then the process still remains. That's what's so beautiful about it. Because it's an illusion that we're not the devotee. Right? But we are. But our consciousness has become transformed. Does that make sense? So our position that this transformation into the mundane is the natural position, that's the illusion. Right? But the illusion exists. So we have to transform it back. Does this make sense? Is this okay? Okay. Is it sounding like our philosophy or like rocket science here? Yeah? Yes? You had something or? Sambandha Navideya. You don't get the prayojana. You don't get the prayojana immediately. What does immediately mean? Because you're saying Sambandha, you know, Abhideya, you know, but you're not getting Prayojana immediately. You're performing the Abhideya, but it still seems that the Prayojana is unobtained. More offenses. What does that mean, more offenses?
Like we see some devotees coming, and we doesn't like the devotee.
We see a devotee coming, we don't like that devotee coming. How is it you're performing the Abhideya, therefore you see him in an inimical way?
We are performing some seva.
You're performing some seva, yes.
So we see some devotees coming and he's doing something and we get angry. So is our Abhideya process get affected by that?
Does the Abhideya process become affected? Abhideya is based on what?
Knowledge we are doing for Krishna.
Yeah, knowledge, so that means knowledge you're doing for Krishna is Sambandha. So that means if your Sambandha doesn't become spiritual, then why would your Abhideya? You understand? That's why you don't get the spiritual result. Right? Spiritual identification, performing spiritual activities based on that identification, gives you spiritual result. But if you still see yourself in a mundane way, to what degree you're seeing yourself in a mundane way, that's not going to give a spiritual result. You understand? Mundane develops, breeds mundane, spiritual breeds spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So when you're performing your activity, if you're not becoming, you know, rolling on the ground with love for Krishna, it's because you don't identify yourself as that kind of devotee. Right? Because the gopis did it in a moment. Others have done it in a moment, so it's possible, just we're very stubborn, right? Because by habit, we've been here a long time, and we have developed very, very deep habits. So it's a matter of moving forward. So What is it that you are looking for in the way of result? What are you looking for? Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness, that is your state of existence. You know what I'm saying? So that's not prayojana. It means you have to be conscious of something to be able to interact with it. How you interact with it defines your relationship with it, and therefore what kind of dealings that you do, so what kind of taste you'll get, okay? So unless you're conscious, you can't be God conscious. So if we find we're not God conscious, there's every chance that we're not actually conscious. Right? Because to be God conscious, so you're conscious of that other devotee you don't like, but you're not conscious of that state of God. So how can you become God conscious if you're not conscious of it? Right? Can I cook if I'm not conscious of the food that I'm dealing with? Right? Can I drive if I'm not conscious of the car? No. So therefore, unless you're conscious of Krishna, how will you develop love for him? Right? I mean, because if I'm conscious of him, then I can decide whether I want to deal with him favorably in devotion or not. Like Kamsa was very conscious of Krishna, but he was not interested in dealing favorably. Right? He was dealing, for his own purposes, but he was very conscious. But until you become conscious, then you can't make it favorable. Therefore, then karma and jnana are left out. So then your feelings towards that other devotee, what are they based on? Why do you like him or not like him? Why would that be there? What's the basis of your liking or not liking someone?
I have observed some behavior of him.
You have observed some behavior of him. He with you, so that means the result you got was bad. So when you see him, you think of bad results. So is that karma or jnana? Jnana. Why would it be jnana? You perform an activity for a specific result. Yes. So therefore it's part of karma. So that means your devotional service at that point is mixed with karma. And in fact, if you become unconscious of Krishna altogether and the process that you're doing, it drops from being karma yoga back into just karma. Does that make sense? You sure? It doesn't make sense. What aren't you able to catch? Nothing. Okay. In this process, where are you from?
Pune.
Pune, okay. In this process, if you do good, are you therefore right? Okay, you do nice things, you do good things, moralistic things. Does that make you right?
No.
Why not?
Because Krishna's not there.
Okay? So that's the basis. So you're seeing someone doing something wrong. What is the basis for you being worried about that something wrong that person is doing? Is it Krishna? Or is it the fruit of result that you get from the interaction? Yes. So then that's karma, no? Yeah. So now, if you see that process in relationship to Krishna, then you can work Krishna into it. Therefore, you can see is what they're doing that you like or don't like. You know? That aspect like that is that if it's unfavorable for Krishna's result, right? So therefore, you have to see, well, how to adjust that for Krishna's result rather than for our own opinion. Does that make sense? So it's a difference in how you deal with it. Jnana is you understand the process is there, and so this person deals in this way, it's not favorable for this process that's going on now, so that has to be adjusted. That's jnana. The karma is you're thinking of the results that you're going to experience rather than the things that are going to be there in the process of service to Krishna. right? So if it's just a matter of absorption in Krishna, everything's supposed to be connected to Krishna, then you'll be trying to connect this person to Krishna. That's bhakti. If you're seeing that the person is a difficulty there, and there's a mechanical process that must be followed so that they get connected, that'll be jnana. But just seeing the process that's there out of one's own emotion, that's karma. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're going from Krishna's feelings, which is bhakti, to your feelings, which is karma. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that okay? Is that now better? You had something? No. Okay.
Shankya philosophy developed elaborate explanations to argue the Parinamavad version of Satkaryavad, that a cause actually changes into its effect. These explanations are central to the whole Shankya system, which proceeds from the premise that the effect exists in its material cause even before the effect is produced. There are five basic arguments for this premise. Okay, that a cause actually changes into its effect, so that the milk actually changes into yogurt. Right, so that is very central to the philosophy that's here. Right, the Shankya is based back onto that. So their whole philosophy is going to be working with that. Does that make sense? In other words, every philosophy is going to have its central core system, but that system is what makes it function. Right? You understand that then you can actually get it to operate and work, and you can get the results at least that it promises. Right? So then the is essential then also just for us in our own philosophy, that we understand like the core element of our philosophy, the Sambandha Abhidaya and Prayojana. Right? And from that, everything we can see. So that means everything else that anyone's talking about here, we can absorb into there. So there'll always be a consistency. So even when we're dealing with someone else's philosophy, it's not a problem, because we remember from logic that to win the argument or win a difference of opinion means that the other person's opinion has to be absorbed into yours, right? Otherwise, why are they going to do what you do? Otherwise, what is it? Agree to disagree? That means no one won. You didn't present points that were motivating enough to the person to accept them, right? Does that make sense? So that means either you don't know yours enough to that deep, and you weren't able to get it through to the person. So your logical presentation wasn't that great. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to establish that. So unless you can see their philosophy, the framework of their philosophy within yours, how are you going to absorb theirs into yours? Right? So that would mean then, one is you'd have a person, how well they understand their philosophy and can present it will be that much successful in a discussion. But at the same time, it also means that the systems itself have a superior and inferior. Does that make sense? So there is, the Vedanta is superior to all the other systems because all the other systems can be absorbed in it. Right? Does that make sense? And we're not talking about the English in it here. Well, actually, maybe we could say in it. Does that make sense? Kind of. Does it make sense to everybody? Yeah? Okay. So that's why this level then becomes important. Right. Remember, Srila Prabhupada has mentioned that the study of the six systems of philosophy, understanding them, he was making it that would be, you know, a proper prerequisite to sit on the Vyasasana and give class. Because you have to be able to defeat the other philosophies that may be presented. Right? Nowadays, people don't present things so technically, so therefore, how much we understand of them, it works. Right? Because basically you can say there's personal and impersonal. So we deal with personal, all aspects of impersonal, then we reject. So all these other systems are basically impersonal, so we can deal with them.
But if you have somebody who is very well studied in one of these schools, we might be at a loss on technicalities of dealing with it. Does that make sense? So that means that we understand our philosophy to its technical, you know, its technical structure. We can understand others because others are much simpler than ours. But ours is so perfect that it takes everything and makes it into the simplest possible thing. Because one is based on logic, one is based on the arrangement of atoms and the karma and everything. You know, here is based on the masculine and feminine principle and establishing the transformation from one to the other. Like that. But we're dealing with that. But none of that defines actually properly or completely relationship. But the living entity is functioning because of his identity and his need. Does that make sense? You don't do an activity unless it's based on who you think you are and what it is you want to get. Right? Someone who doesn't have an identity doesn't know activity. Right? Someone who doesn't feel confident or who is insecure doesn't do something because there's no identity to base it on. Yes? So, therefore, all things that are going on, whether it's spiritual or material, anything, is all based on relationship. And so then this ultimately there's God and his creation and their interaction. So that makes three things, right? God, one, his creation, two, and their interaction, three. Right? And then within that element of God, then you have the aspect of he as a person, but there's going to be an environment in which he and his creation are going to interact. So that, therefore, there's another manifestation of that creation. It means, in other words, there's a situation in which you act. Does that make sense? Two people interact with each other in a situation. Right? You don't act outside of a situation. Can you act just in the, you know, I mean, it's like, even the impersonalists, they have to make clouds and make an om sign. And then they'll put whatever they want in there. Because even though they claim they're impersonal, no one can bend their head around actually nothing exists. It does, because it's not an option. You know what I'm saying? So even they have to put the clouds and this and that and something to represent it for them in their own mind. Oh, okay, it's time to go. Okay? Does that make sense? So that means then the Lord and his devotee, the Lord, the masculine element, Sambandha, is going to interact, Abhideya, with his devotee, Prayojana, in an environment, which is another aspect of Sambandha. You understand? So the two aspects, so that's how, from the three, you have four. So Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana is always described as four aspects. Right? Because the relationship has to take place in an environment. Does that make sense? Right? So that way then everything, because you have God, who is everything, you have his energy, which is therefore, you know, his non-dual aspect, which is everything. You have their interaction, which then covers all any kind of relationship that's there. And it has to happen in the situation, therefore all situations are included. So is there anything left? No. Because that's actually what's going on. So these other things where they include karma and they include it, it has parts of it there, but it doesn't actually come to the point of relationship. Why would you want to be interacting with material nature or not? That they're not defining. You know, other than you want to be happy. But what's your relationship with that material nature, with that God? That doesn't exist. Therefore, we can absorb their philosophy into ours. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so we'll end today's rocket science. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitāya Gaura Premanandi.